Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Great to have you in on Wednesday. It's Hail Varsity Radio presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, the pride of Chicago, is Danny Burke. We can be followed, not necessarily home. That would be weird, but find us on Twitter at Schmidt underscore radio, at Danny Burke 5, at Hail Varsity. You can email Chris at HailVarsity.com. We'll hear from Coach Tim Miles as he met the media today. Am I needing to be drug tested? Or am I the only one thinking that Thursday night, we'll spend some more time tomorrow on Nebraska-Penn State, but am I the only one that might be a tad shaky about tomorrow night? Penn State coming in. I know Penn State just got drilled by Wisconsin in Unhappy Valley last weekend. But man, I just don't like the way Nebraska's going right now. That's obvious. It's more than a win-loss thing. It's kind of the look and the feel, the effort, the attitude. Tim Miles will comment on that. I'm not saying they're going to lose. I'm just saying whatever that number is, bet on Penn State.
Really?
We'll be down in the public market. I about said old market. That would be a bad decision from a distance standpoint. We'll be in the public market tomorrow, Rail Yard, Real Red Tip-Off, Hail Varsity Show on the road. In the public market in the Rail Yard tomorrow. Just inside where you get your ice skates. We may have a couple of offensive linemen stop by. We may not. But so that'll be cool. But yeah, we'll talk some Nebraska basketball today. I know we just spent some time with Lars Anderson. Lars is extremely close to Bruce Arians. Did his book with Bruce, the quarterback whisperer, and Bruce Arians is back in the NFL in Tampa, and Lars also down in Alabama. So we'll get caught up with Lars Anderson in about 10 to 15 minutes, get his take on if Tampa can make a serious postseason push with the right coach and the talent but knuckleheadedness of Jameis Winston. We love Levante David, friend of the show. You want him to get a playoff run and maybe a ring put together. There's a lot of great-looking puzzle pieces in Tampa, and theoretically the centerpiece should be the quarterback with his skill set, but there's been some issues. So we will talk to Lars Anderson and his relationship with Bruce Arians. We're hoping to see Shuey today, Mike Shuhart. It is Wednesday. Brad Edwards going to put a bow on the college football season in hour two, 1 hour from now, and open phones for you right now and a little bit after 525. 466-3776, 466-3776, 800-825-5865. We can spend some time on Coach Frank Solich getting honored tonight with the Tom Osborne Legacy Award. That is tonight in Omaha. So what are you going to say if I tell you that Nebraska will finish third in the Big Ten West? Immediate reaction is what? Are you screaming shenanigans? Are you screaming BS? Are you throwing things at your Amazon smart speaker and radio? Third, to me, my first gut reaction, and this is from Athlon, again, way too early predictions for the Big Ten West. I think that is, if they finish third, I think that'd be a disappointment. And let me tell you why. And most of it has to do with the schedule. I don't think Nebraska in year two is going to be outclassed or outmanned at all at some spots. I think they're better than most people in the Big Ten at quarterback. I think there's a couple of guys that you really like coming back on offense along with Adrian. Obviously, Maurice Washington. Obviously, J.D. Spielman. And I know you have key components of your offensive line back. You've got two returning tackles. Whether the right tackle stays the right tackle, so be it. There are replacements on the offensive line to make. I like that Tyron Ferguson's going to be back for another year. I like Deonte Williams at safety. I like Nebraska's corners. While not deep, both guys really played well and had a good finish to the season. And I like Mo Berry on the inside. I like some of the options Nebraska's going to have. But there are so many unknowns, right? There are unknowns at the inside linebacker spot. There's unknowns at a guard and center spot. There's unknowns at running back. There is no Ziggy to hand the football off to. And there's no Stan the Man to find at the first down yard marker or on a deep fly. You have Stollett tight end that's good. Defensive line. You've got three guys that have played a lot of snaps. You have the Davis twins. You have Ben Stilley. Are they going to go from serviceable to good to difference making? They're going to try. They're going to do their best to do so. But are they going to make a jump to beyond adequate? Okay. Freedom's a great dude. Freedom played his butt off at Nebraska. How many splash plays did Freedom make in his career? Part of that was, what's he being asked to do? And part of that is, did he ever turn it loose? Okay. You don't want to look at the Davis twins and Ben Stilley and say, man, they were good. They were durable. They busted their ass. You love them. But you need a guy to come up and be effective, not just at setting the edge and stopping the run, but eventually getting to the quarterback. Okay? And these guys have a chance to do it. There's plenty of football left for the Davis twins. You have Damian Daniels. How many snaps are you going to be able to get out of him and his brother? If you get a tag team effort, man, that'd be sweet, because Nebraska is not getting smacked around in that A gap on the offensive line. If Damian Daniels can give you more than 4 or 5 series, that may be generous. Maybe we're talking 3 series, but it changed the Iowa game. That's what I have in my mind, is what are you going to do at Iowa? What are you going to do against Wisconsin? Both come to Lincoln. So Nebraska being pegged by Athlon as the third best team in the West, I can get talked into it, and I can just try and tell you to talk you out of it. The reason I talk myself out of saying, yeah, that's about right, and say that second or better, is because of what you got at quarterback and the belief that guys will have an even bigger and better off-season strength training session, and Nebraska will find some guys. You might have addition by subtraction. You may have better guys coming in or waiting in the wings that just needed another year in the weight room to really kind of blossom. The running back spot concerns me greatly. There are really talented options, but are they going to be reliable? What are you going to do at wide receiver without Stan? That concerns me. Nebraska's schedule is the deciding factor for me. It's the tiebreaker. I think Nebraska football, with their schedule in 2019, with everybody in the West coming to town, it's an odd year. So that means Northwestern's coming to Lincoln. That means Wisconsin's coming to Lincoln. And that means you have Iowa coming to Lincoln. I think that's great. It's not murderer's row like last year. Going to Purdue and Minnesota, not easy. But you've won there before, and they're not so much. It's not like you're going to Alabama or Clemson. You can go win at Minnesota. You can go win in Purdue. It's been difficult, but you can do it.
Did it with Mike Riley,
and then you're at Colorado. So when I look at Nebraska and I look at Athlon pegging who is where, and Nebraska coming in at third, I can see it. But I think Nebraska will at worst finish second next year. There's a lot of ifs. There's way more questions than answers as to why they would finish third. You know, it is. Not wrong to see the breakdown here is you've got the West Division and Nate Stanley's a returning quarterback. Is Hawkinson declared yet or not?
I don't think so. I don't think yet.
So if you lose Hawkinson and Noah Fant, and then you lose that cornerback who's already declared, that isn't good. Okay. I mean, that if he's gone, that's not good. Espinenza's a money defensive end for Iowa. So Iowa's D line's pretty good. Wisconsin, they'll probably go with Jack Cohen at quarterback, which would be a major upgrade. Wisconsin will be better defensively. That's all right. So with Nebraska here, they finished the 2018 campaign at 4-2, outlasted Michigan State, coulda, shoulda, woulda, Ohio State, and Iowa. And that's the question. The reasoning here by Athlon is there's just too much to replace on offense when you lose Foster and you lose Farmer, and then you lose Stanley, which I get. And you have questions to answer. Trey Neal was nice. Aaron Williams is gone. Antonio Reed. I mean, Antonio had a really good finish to his career. So where you at? Insult or truth with Nebraska being pegged as the third best team in the Big Ten West? 466-377-6800-825-5865. I don't like Minnesota being picked fifth here. I think that's way low. As good as Northwestern is, and they've maybe finally proven it, they're still slotted fourth. So it's Iowa, Wisconsin, Nebraska. Until Nebraska takes one of these two down or two of these two, Nebraska deserves probably to be pegged third or below. I just think what you got at quarterback and what you're going to have with this staff compared and combined with the schedule could be good.
Yeah, I kind of thought the same thing as you. The first word that came to my mind was if they finish third, I'd be disappointed. I envision a one or two finish, and I think it's going to come down to Wisconsin or Nebraska more so than Iowa. Iowa's got a really tough schedule.
So you may not beat them, but yeah, they may be 8-5 again.
Right. Like, you know, the Hawkeyes, they take on Michigan, Northwestern, Wisconsin, and Nebraska on the road. Yeah, and the big question remains for Nebraska, how are they going to replace Stanley Morgan and all the loopholes in the defense? Mm-hmm. I'm not too worried about the tailback position, however, for Nebraska. I remember at the beginning of the season, we were asking Greg, you know, are running backs still going to want to come here because they got so many recruits coming? Granted, that was when Greg Bell was still part of the team too.
Sure.
But now you want to see how these recruits pan out. I have complete trust in Maurice Washington. It just depends who can also come in along with him. And then as for Northwestern and Minnesota, I think Minnesota, I was just telling you, I think it's a little surprising Minnesota's over Purdue. I know we saw how both of those teams performed in the bowl games, but I still do not have confidence really in Minnesota to be consistent. I think with Jeff Brohm coming back, it'll kind of be like the whole Scott Frost deal, another year to be with him and develop. So I think they will finish higher than Minnesota. Northwestern, I mean, I said it at the beginning of the summer that people are going to overlook them, and, you know, they lived up to the hype and then some. And I think they're going to even take this as motivation, come back even better. They got that five-star transfer from Clemson coming in at quarterback most likely. And, you know, they missed their star running back the whole year, so we'll see how they can replace that.
They did a whole hell of a lot after a brutal start, and they just kind of kept finding ways. Purdue could be the biggest team in the West to step back. I mean, you still have Moore, who's phenomenal. Mm-hmm. But Blau, by the time he finally got to his senior season, he was a damn good quarterback. But you don't have Markell Jones or DJ Knox. Purdue's run game was underrated. It was physical. They were good. Mm-hmm. Brohm will find guys to play ball. But I think Purdue's destined to step back. They could have won. Coulda, shoulda, coulda, woulda went 8-4, 7-5 this year. Instead, they ended up. Well, they even end up 6-7. They went to the bowl game at 6-6, and then they got drilled by Auburn.
Yeah,
nice scheduling there. But and I think Illinois is going to be better. I mean, Lovey's getting some dudes.
Yeah, it's hard to get continually worse over there.
No, but I think he's got some players. Mm. I mean, he has guys that'll end up in the league. Some of them. Wisconsin will be interesting. I mean, they had their kind of come to Jesus season.
Right.
I think Iowa, they're kicking themselves. 9-4 is nothing to sneeze at, but they lost three of those four games by like 12 points. They were right there. And it's funny because Iowa and Wisconsin in the odd years, I mean, it's road warrior time.
Mm-hmm.
The odd years for Nebraska, that's when you get most of the West in Lincoln. And I think it's an emphasis for sure for Coach Frost to win in Lincoln. That's what you got to do. That's kind of his expectation because he didn't lose in Lincoln.
And that's the advantage they have this upcoming season.
It is. And, you know, everything will be a little bit better since it's year two. But really, your difference maker is going to be what do you get out of your defense? As they came along, they forced more turnovers for sure. Can you get after the quarterback? That's a priority. Mm-hmm. First and foremost, can you stop the run consistently? And is your quarterback going to be – Nebraska's got the best quarterback in the league, period. Period. It's not a stretch. Adrian Martinez is – and I know Shea Patterson's good. Shea Patterson's got a lot more around him. Adrian Martinez is just so phenomenal that it's uncanny. That's what you get and what you have at Nebraska. The other 21 around him and the depth needs to step up and make this thing a season to kind of bring Nebraska back to the conversation. They're starting out in a lot of top 25 preseason polls. And I don't think there's any expectation to go undefeated or maybe even go to the Big Ten championship game. But you got to be in it to the end of the regular season. I think Nebraska's team can absolutely do that, where if they miss winning the West, it won't be by much, and they'll be a solid number two in the West. Lars Anderson's coming up. Get his thoughts on Bruce Arians, his friend and co-author, returning to Tampa. That's on the way with Hail Varsity.
And we're back.
Fellas, you think we could listen to the radio?
On Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes! That's awesome!
Back with you, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. We say hi to Lars Anderson, co-host of the Jay Barker Show, and author of The Quarterback Whisperer with one Bruce Arians at Lars Anderson 71. Lars, what's up? Thanks for the time. Your old buddy Bruce back in the NFL, man. Are you shocked?
No, I'm not. I'm still close with Bruce. I know that it was hard for him to walk away from the Arizona Cardinals job, but he just felt that he needed to get his health in order. And he's been able to do that. The Buccaneers put him through the most intensive physical you can ever imagine, and he passed it with flying colors. And I just knew that he missed the game. It was like a long-lost lover for him, and he needed to be reunited with it. What makes the Tampa Bay job so attractive to Bruce is, on just a personal note, he and his wife Chris live in Georgia, in the middle of Georgia, on a beautiful lake, and they call it their forever home. And it's going to be easy for Chris to almost commute to see him. And that was a problem out when Bruce was out in Phoenix. She was commuting in a way, but she was commuting across the country. So it's a real easy flight from Atlanta down to Tampa, just about an hour. So that's just on a personal level, there's that. And then on a professional level, he has known Jameis Winston since Jameis was like 12, 13 years old. I live in Birmingham, and Jameis grew up just right outside of Birmingham. And Bruce would hold football clinics here. Bruce has a lot of connections to Alabama. He was on Bear Bryant's last staff at Alabama, and then he came back and had a second stint as offensive coordinator. Bruce's daughter, who was married and had just had a baby, she lives in Birmingham. And so anyway, Bruce got to know Jameis at these camps when Jameis was young, and they have maintained a relationship through the years. And Bruce definitely thinks he can fix Jameis, and he can make Jameis into the franchise quarterback that a lot of people believed he would become when he was picked number one overall coming out of Florida State and after leading Florida State to a national championship. And I'm telling you, Bruce, what you see is what you get. He does not suffer fools at all. And what I mean by that is, if he sees Jameis sort of going off the rails, Bruce will let him know in very clear, colorful language. Nobody can drop an F-bomb like Bruce Arians, let me tell you. The guys at the Cardinals front office joke that Bruce is the only one who can turn an F-bomb into a subject, a noun, and a verb. I think when he was there at Arizona with Carson Palmer, Bruce liked to say that he was the cool uncle that he'd like to have a drink with. Like, that was his relationship with Carson. I think with Jameis, he is going to be the heavy-fisted father figure who you are absolutely terrified of. And he is going to put some sort of Old Testament fear into Jameis and make sure that he just pays attention. And look, we all know the name of our book was The Quarterback Whisperer because Bruce has this long, very detailed history of turning quarterbacks around and getting the best performance possible out of quarterbacks. And so I think he's going to do that with Jameis. And if you get Jameis playing at a high level, there's a lot of talent on that roster. And Bruce would not be taking this job. Trust me, he would not be taking this job if he didn't think he could win a Super Bowl within 3 years.
Tampa's always had defense. You got McCoy down there on the defensive line. Nebraska's Levante David's tremendous. Secondary's not bad. Tampa's always kind of lacked some pop on offense. You have DeSean Jackson. You have Mike Evans. Fitzmagic had some good showings this year, but it's really Jameis they're waiting on. Lars Anderson with us here, Hail Varsity Radio, author with Bruce Arians, the Quarterback Whisperer at Lars Anderson 71s, where you follow him on Twitter, co-host of the Jay Barker Show. You listen to these quarterbacks that are great, but they kind of went to a new level after working with Bruce Arians. Peyton Manning, Ben Roethlisberger, Andrew Luck. Arizona was always contending with an aged Carson Palmer. He was still good, but he'd never been tapped, right? And now you have that opportunity with Jameis, because Jameis has got all the tools. He's just got to get his head screwed on straight, correct?
That is exactly it. And look, he's going to surround Jameis with really talented guys. The passing game coordinator is going to be Byron Leftwich, who Bruce brought on in Arizona as an intern. He started with Bruce as an intern. Mm-hmm. And, they're going to surround Jameis with guys like, I mean, Leftwich is going to be perfect for him, you know, because he played in the league at a high level for a while with the Jaguars. And he's really smart, articulate. He sees things on the field. He will really be able to relate to Jameis. And on the defensive side, he's going to bring in Todd Bowles, former Jets head coach who was just let go. Bruce and Bowles go all the way back to Temple when Bruce was the youngest head coach in America at 30 years old at Temple. Todd was one of his star players, and he was Todd was Bruce's defensive coordinator for a long time out in Arizona before he got the job with the Jets. And so he's assembling, and I shouldn't say assembling, he's already assembled the staff. Like, he had a very clear plan that he presented to the Glazers, and, from what I'm told, they were just blown away. Like, Bruce knows exactly what he wants to do and where he's going and how he's going to get there, detailed map of how it's going to unfold, how it's going to happen. And another thing is, Bruce has a reputation around the league among players as being the absolute best guy to play for. Because with Bruce, there's no sort of black and white. I'm sorry, there's no gray. Everything is black and white. And what you see is what you get with him. And there's a level of authenticity with Bruce that resonates with players. And so I have literally heard, and I'm just the guy who wrote Bruce's book. I mean, or I should say we wrote it together. I'm a co-author with him on it. But I've literally had agents calling me, telling me about players who want to, and these are high-level players who want to come to Tampa now just simply because Bruce is there and would be willing to take a discount. So I think you'll be perhaps a little surprised at some of the guys that he's going to be able to sign.
Well, I mean, he's got that reputation. Lars, before we talk Crimson Tide and Clemson, give us a minute or two on your experience and kind of the backstory, how you and Bruce hooked up. Bruce Arians is very colorful. People respect the heck out of him. He's very demanding. Tell me about your experience working with him for the Quarterback Whisperer.
His agent contacted my literary agent, and we hit it off really well. We spent a lot of time together out in Phoenix, some late nights, sipping a little Crown here and there, had some fun. And then in the off season, we played golf. Bruce is a big, big golfer, and really just got to know each other. And then, we spent several weeks just talking at poolside at his place in Georgia after playing golf. And, you know, he would talk and I would sort of, you know, frantically take notes, and we just had a really enjoyable experience. I wrote the entire manuscript, about 70,000 words, and then Bruce and I, we literally went over it in one day. And that was it. Because Bruce is—he's a man who was like, if he likes something, he likes it. Move on, and that's what we did. And again, the book did really well. And again, we had nothing but positive experiences for the most part. There was a little creative tension every once in a while, but that was all good. And we've maintained a friendship, I think this is a home run hire. I've been doing some radio shows down in the Tampa area today, and I just been telling everyone that they don't know how lucky they are to have Bruce. Even though I think at age 66 he's the oldest coach ever to be hired in NFL history, but Bruce is a young 66, and there is a lot of firepower still in him, and all you got to do is just hang out with him for a little bit, and you'll see it. And there's a reason guys like Chris Mortensen and Jay Glazer will tell you that their favorite coach in the NFL is Bruce Arians, and it's just because he knows how to coach hard, but he also knows how to play hard, and he'll let you into his life, and that's what he did with me.
Well, The Quarterback Whisperer came out in 2017. Amazing book with Bruce Arians, Lars Anderson, authored together on Hail Varsity Radio. Lars, you've been in Alabama a long time. You've spent time in Manhattan. You've also spent time in SEC country with the Jay Barker radio show, my friend. What's the aftermath like after Bama got spanked by Clemson and Dabo?
People are still in shock and just trying to dissect everything of what happened. And Jay and I now have spent over about 6 hours on radio talking about it with various people. It's hard to wrap your head around, but really, if I could distill what happened to Alabama on Monday night, if I could distill that into one word, it would be confusion. They were just absolutely perplexed on both sides of the ball, what Dabo Swinney and coordinators, especially Bent Venables, the defensive coordinator, did, because they were throwing stuff at Alabama that they hadn't seen all year. They got away from all of their tendencies, and what they did on offense was they cherry-picked different plays and formations that had given Alabama fits throughout the season with different teams. Like, they even took stuff from the Citadel, and the Citadel was tied with Alabama 10-10 at halftime. They took plays from the Citadel and ran them against Alabama on Monday night, and plays that Clemson hadn't run all year. And so the Alabama guys, you saw them in the secondary, especially like when they ran a stacked formation, mm-hmm. right? The word, they have three wide receivers just stacked on top of each other. Alabama hadn't seen that all year. In the secondary, the guys are still pretty young. And, we had Antonio Langham in studio today. Antonio is a former first-round draft pick for Alabama, played in the NFL for many years. And he just said that he's friends with guys on the staff. He just said that they were so confused they weren't even talking. The coverages that they threw at Tua, the mixture of coverages and blitzes, again, they hadn't seen him do that. And Tua's still just a sophomore. This is his first full year of starting. He got just rattled. And that first pick six, I think, really hurt his confidence. He projected confidence as he came to the sideline saying, my fault, my fault. He wasn't reading the field the way he normally does. And then he got gun-shy. He started throwing off of his back foot. He lost his accuracy, which is his hallmark. You just haven't seen that out of a Nick Saban team since really his first year back in 2007. It was stunning, and you have to congratulate Clemson and their coaching staff because they outwitted the master, Nick Saban. I mean, Dabo Swinney absolutely outclassed the Alabama coaches, and there's just no two ways about it. When Dabo met Nick at midfield, he said he had a very succinct message. He just said, see you next year.
Lars, thanks for jumping on again, man. I know it's been a busy day for you. We'll do this again.
All right, thanks, Chris. Appreciate it, man.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Great to have you back. Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. We say hi to Mike Shuhart. Shuey is in studio. It is Wednesday at 4:40. We're going to talk some sports. We're going to talk some golf with Mike Shewhart. See him at Wilderness Ridge. Shuey, how are you, brother?
I'm doing good. It's like summer out there.
Yeah, it's not bad. I'm a little sad that college football is now over.
Yeah, me too. I like watching football.
Now, just to be clear, you're wearing your Wilderness polo, and it's beautiful. But one could mistake it for maybe being a Clemson shirt.
Yeah.
Timeliness is everything for you.
After that performance, man, I'm a bandwagger. It's
no, like, I got you. So what'd you do for the championship game?
I watched.
No, I know. Did you get a little steak on the grill? What'd you do?
No, I just ate dinner before, did a little workout before, and then sat and watched the game, and I was kind of in awe.
Yeah.
It's like, wow, did not expect that. Mm-hmm. That was pretty impressive performance there.
It was, and you just heard Lars Anderson was like, confusion for 1,000, Alex. I mean, that was it. To hear Lars kind of break it down, and then some of the other Alabama insiders he's connected with explained it well, and Saban, I mean, we'll talk with Brad Edwards here in about 20 minutes. I mean, Saban knew, like, after the second series, like, we're in trouble. Because when Saban's hacked off and his guys aren't performing up to a certain level that he knows that they're capable of, that's when he loses it.
Yeah.
If he's quiet, I mean, it's shutdown mode. He's over.
Yeah.
It's over. That's what we kind of took away from it.
Yeah, it was funny. I mean, it just they looked like they knew exactly every play they were going to run. They were in the right spot before Alabama was even there. Mm-hmm. So it's like they were very well prepared for what. But they played him enough times; they know what's coming.
Yeah.
You know? And it's like they just.
Let me ask you: do you think there's a part of Bama that says we're going to show up and be Alabama and beat you because we did last year? The other part of it, I'm wondering, there's been moments like Nebraska when they rocked Florida. Coach McBride put in the zone blitz and Florida had no answer, no clue. What the hell's this? What Coach Barnett did when he ran for thousands of yards and several thousand touchdowns against Nebraska on Black Friday.
Oh, yeah.
They had that thing pegged where the game plan and execution was all 1,000%.
That's what it exactly looked like. I mean, every blitz they drew up, man, hit home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every play that Alabama tried to make was a trick play or this and that. I mean, it had no chance right from the very beginning. So it's like they knew exactly what was coming every single time. I mean, they were very well prepared. Mm-hmm. And I think you get a little that way. Alabama's so good that sometimes you think you can just kind of walk in there.
Just show and go, babe.
Just show and go, and it'll be okay. And it's all right. They might be, you know, have a touchdown lead, but that's no big deal because we'll come back. And it's like, no, they just kept making touchdowns and scoring touchdowns. And it's like Clemson was every bit as good as Alabama.
Or better. Or better talent-wise. I mean, they had their guys really show. That ever happened? You ever see that happen on the golf course?
Oh, yeah.
Where folks just kind of, I played this course before, I'm good to go, in competition setting, and the course eats them up.
Exactly. So it's like, you know, you feel like you're playing really good, you're doing this, you know, it's like you just kind of,
I'm me.
I've been playing really good, so I don't really prepare quite that week going into the tournament, you know, and all of a sudden get off to a little shaky start.
All of a sudden you snap one off the box.
Yeah. And then that course gets a little narrower, the hole gets a little smaller, and it's like, what the heck? This was pretty easy last week, not so easy this week. So that happens. And vice versa, you know, you get some guys. I'll remember when Stephen Ames called Tiger out, and right before the match, they had a match play tournament, and Tiger beat him.
How long ago was that? I kind of remember something.
About 10 years ago, maybe. Yeah. I mean, he beat him like 10-8 or whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, he just destroyed him. He didn't win a hole. It was like last time he ever called Tiger out.
Yeah. This will put pressure on me, and I'll raise to the pressure.
Yeah, he raised all right.
Danny and I were talking Athlon's preseason Big Ten rankings, and they have Ohio State picked again to win the West, but they have Ohio State picked to win the East. They have Nebraska pegged third. You keep your ears to the ground with football, man. You know what's going on. What's your reaction to that? Nebraska circled as third in the Big Ten West. Purdue's all the way down at 7.
Yeah, that's pretty surprising.
Six. They have Illinois at 7. They have Minnesota at 5 with the way that Row Your Boat guy finished the year.
They played nice.
They played great football for them, too.
Towards the end of the year. So
physical. They won at Madison, for God's sake. Exactly. They've got Iowa, who's losing a lot, Wisconsin, and then Nebraska.
Yeah. I mean, it's to me, it is wide open.
It is.
I mean, there is no true team that you look at and go, yeah, they're going to win. They can win that conference pretty easy. I'm almost every one of those teams, you know,
could make a case.
Could make a case for winning the division, you know, and Nebraska
specifically your
well.
Top four, I would say, with Northwestern coming in at 4.
And, you know, you got to like Nebraska's chances. I mean, they got probably the best player at the position that's key in their quarterback, you know. I'm not sure there's not one quarterback in the conference that's better than Martinez. There's no way. So that's a huge help right there because that's the most important position that does a lot. So,
I like the schedule.
And the schedule.
Quarterback and schedule are two.
Those are two key components right there.
Are you nervous with me that Ziggy's going to be hard to replace and Stanley's going to be hard to replace?
Yeah, those two guys.
And the defense, the lines of scrimmage. I think the O-line can make some strides. And I like.
See, I'm not as concerned with our defense because it's like they got to play better. Another year, guys developing, and it's like the guys.
You saw some progress.
You know, who you have to replace that really is like, oh, man, we can't replace him.
Yeah, there's no Levante David.
Exactly. Uh-huh. You know, so the defense is they're going to be better, you know. The two positions that concern for me are Stanley and Ziggy. You don't have another back on the roster that's like Ziggy.
Power, speed.
Yeah, so it's hard to you don't have a guy that you can just plug in there and do that. So you got to find somebody that can replace that type of player. And then Stanley, man, he made plays downfield. So who do you got that's going to replace that? You know, so those are the two key positions. If you can find guys to step up and can replace those guys, you know, they're going to be harder to replace than a Freedom, you know, Freedom, a good player, but can you replace him and get the same, if not a little better production?
You would think.
You're not going to replace Stanley. We get somebody that you wouldn't think that's going to give you better production than what he had, you know.
Well, think about taking some of the heat off. If you're a defense, you can take one away or pay attention to one, but not the other. Good luck D-ing up Stanley and Spielman at the same time.
Exactly. So, I mean, it compromised the defense a little bit. Now it's like if you don't have a Stanley out there and you only got a key on Spielman, that makes the defense a little bit easier. So, but I'm sure there's guys out there that will.
They got Maurice, the Washington, that's an option, not to put too much pressure on Wandale Robinson, but he's a guy.
He's pretty good.
Yeah. Did you watch any of that Under Armour All-American game?
Yeah, that guy's good.
He can ball.
Yeah, he can.
He can ball, can't he? Not too shabby. Mike Shuhart is in. Shuey's in studio every Wednesday at 4:40. We'll hit a little bit of some Husker hoops and your old buddy Gary Woodland at Kapalua.
Yeah.
BGA underway out in Hawaii. Someday, Shuey, we need to do a show from Hawaii.
That'd be all right.
During the PGA.
Okay.
Can we make that happen?
Let's do that.
All right, deal. We'll wind down hour one. Brad Edwards coming up. Hail Varsity continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Coming up 10 minutes away, it's Brad Edwards, ESPN Insider College Game Day. Mike Shuhart's in studio. Chris Schmidt, Danny Burke, the Pride of Chicago. We'll hear from Tim Miles around 5:20 or so as he met the media today. Big game against Penn State. Shuey, you're a huge Husker Hoops fan. Danny and I almost broke our TVs against Iowa. I was watching with my buddy Iowa Russ, and we were having an argument. No, my team's gonna piss this away. No, my team will do this. And I, when I'm at home watching, I will pour a drink and be a fan. Okay, and I will not let how good or bad the performance was color what I do 4-6. As far as making it personal, I won't do that. But they had not the same intensity or effort that was needed. And I think, man, I think this team's just wearing down a little bit on top of the mental focus. And Penn State's one of the last teams you want to see coming in if you're wayward with your commitment.
Yeah, but I think a lot of it is you go through your little ups and downs.
It's a long year.
And I think they're just kind of in their little down mode.
Mm-hmm.
coming back home will help a lot. They'll get a little energized, put together a little better game plan, I guess, or just play better.
Or just execute, right?
Yeah. And then they'll start getting on a little more of their upward trend again. That's what I'm hoping anyway.
Well, get some juice back so you can take it with you to Bloomington.
Yeah.
And go steal that one.
I was just a little concerned because I think Iowa did something to them that they didn't expect. They went zone a lot. Mm-hmm. And
it's going to be a nice roadmap for the rest of the league.
Yeah. And they didn't know what to do with it very well. I mean, I'm sitting there watching it, and man, they're throwing the ball around the top of the key forever before they ever did anything. And so it's like
this driveway ball where it's 3-2-1, let's launch
and
one.
And then launch it up and then end
it's
up
from,
shooting.
It's from
like,
Danny Birkland.
Yeah, 7% from the 3-point line. I mean, that's not very good. So Danny, they just look very confused trying to do something against the zone. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's like that was a little concerning to me.
When they did decide to like penetrate and execute, they got mid range or a dump off and a dunk a lot of times or a layup.
You know,
it just took a while.
It took them too long to figure it out and get kind of comfortable figuring it out. That was my concern because you got a senior laden team right there. You would think they could figure that out a little quicker than that and what they needed to do. Mm-hmm. You know, but are they a little stubborn and stuck in their ways and going to sit out there and jack up threes and shoot bricks all day, you know, and it's like...
Can build another garage.
Yeah, or two.
Mm-hmm. Shuey, let's talk PGA here. Give me a little background on your pal. You've worked with Gary Woodland, and he's out at Kapalua doing well. The first event for the PGA out in beautiful Hawaii.
Yeah, exciting. The golf season kicks off, man. They just finished their first event. Out in Kapalua, and Gary Woodland played some really nice golf, the whole tournament, actually. Mm-hmm. He just happened to run into a buzzsaw the last day. You know, it was Xander Schauffele shooting 11 under the last day. Gary shoots 5 under to get to 20, I think 21 under. And
you played at Kapalua?
I haven't played that course.
Okay. You've been out to Hawaii?
I have been out there. It's pretty nice, especially this time of the year. It's pretty nice out there.
Let me give you the facial play-by-play of Shuey. Hey, Shuey, was it nice out there? And there's this little smirk, and there's this gleam in his eyes. Yeah, it's pretty nice out there.
It's pretty nice out there. So it's exciting. The golf season has kicked off. So
I can't wait for the Masters.
I know.
It's
not that far away.
It isn't. Shuey, hang out. Brad Edwards is coming up. And we'll be into hour two of Hail Varsity. Danny Burke, the Pride of Chicago, Chris Schmidt. And we'll be back shortly with Hail Varsity presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz_radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Back to an hour two at Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Danny Burke, Mike Shuhart hanging out. We welcome in Brad Edwards, ESPN Insider, College Game Day at J. Brad Edwards. Brad, we have brought extra Kleenex because college football is over, at least till spring football starts. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, and I don't want to jump the gun here, but since you're already lamenting the fact that we have almost an 8-month wait until we see college football again, I'll go ahead and spoil it for you like I did for everyone else on our podcast yesterday by saying that there are only 3 teams that have a chance to win the national title next year. So if you're not one of those 3 teams, I hope that your goals are set lower than that, because if not, it's going to be a disappointing year.
Las Vegas told me yesterday Nebraska's got a 30-1 shot. Those are the odds. It was 25-1, 30-1, depending on the book. They were a top 10 option to make the national championship game. They weren't Bama Clemson odds, mind you, Brad. But if you're a Husker fan coming off 4-8 and you're getting 30-1 or 25-1, sign me up, man.
Yeah, that's not bad compared to what it's been in the last few seasons before this. I would imagine it was more the 50-1 or worse range. So, yes, it's something to get. Look, hey, at this point, just getting back to the Big Ten championship game would be a lot of fun.
No, and that could happen. I want to start with what you were talking about on your podcast. And okay, Clemson, Alabama, who's the third team?
Georgia. Okay. And you know what? And I said that before Georgia made its change at offensive coordinator, and I'm still not completely sure whether Kirby had decided to make a move, and because of that, Jim Chaney was willing to go to Tennessee, or whether Tennessee legitimately stole him. But either way, you're looking at a head coach in Kirby Smart who is only—he's only been a head coach for three seasons in his life, so he's entering his fourth season as a head coach. And it's having to replace both coordinators, even with all the talent they have. That there's a lot that can go wrong there. So I'm not even as confident about Georgia as I was when I said that yesterday.
Well, Nick Saban's had to replace coordinators every year, every other year, sometimes both. And you had new coordinators this season for Alabama. Bama breezed through. It got rough against Georgia. It was Jalen to the rescue. And then Clemson just went nuts. It reminded me of Nebraska, Florida, just, and I know Florida fans and the national folks were wowed about how bad Nebraska and Coach Osborne destroyed Spurrier's crew. Nebraska fans still smile about that. It was kind of a similar reaction nationally, like, where did that come from? Clemson wasn't out of the realm of possibility to have them win, but to have them go 44-16 was incredible. What have you been able to put your finger on as to why things shook out the way they did Monday?
Yeah, so I would say that, first of all, and look, the scoreboard would indicate as much. It wasn't the same level of domination as Nebraska over Florida. But this one almost, it also was not as bad as the scoreboard made it look. You know, Alabama, truth be told, moved the ball better than Clemson did offensively. Now, Clemson hit huge plays, and that ended up being the big difference in the game. Alabama would easily march down inside the Clemson 25 every time they got the ball, but they only got in the end zone on one of those drives. And you know, that combined with the efficiency on third down for Clemson, is what was the difference of the game. And of course, you throw in the two interceptions that Tua threw, one of which was returned for a touchdown, the other one set up a short field for another touchdown. And that's what led to the blowout. But I think on that night, however many years ago that was, Nebraska looked like they were just physically superior to Florida. I didn't think Clemson looked physically superior. They just looked like they were much more prepared for the game and ready for the moment. Alabama, shockingly, given how many times they've been on that stage, didn't look prepared and ready for the moment.
Was it overconfidence? Was it beyond confusion? Was it just an amazing scheme job by Clemson? What's your theory on why they didn't look ready?
Well, so I'll go back to the offensive side. Sure. Alabama had, and I think if you watch the game, you can easily see where Alabama could have scored three more touchdowns than they did. Now, they would still lose with three more touchdowns. It's just 44-37. So my point is, it's not on the Alabama offense. If you're looking for, you know, for where they lost the game, it's defensively. And, you know, sure, you could say their secondary got torched and all that. I went into the game thinking that Clemson's receivers had an edge on Alabama's DBs, but where I thought it wasn't going to matter that much is that I expected Alabama to get a lot more pressure on Trevor Lawrence, and they practically got none. And that was the biggest surprise for me, was that the Clemson offensive line that really was not able to block very well for the running game did a superb job in pass protection. And look, the reason that they were always in third down and mostly third and long is because they weren't able to run it. But in spite of that, they not only converted, but they made huge plays in the process of converting on third downs. And I don't know if you saw this tweet that I sent out yesterday, but prior to the final drive of the game where Clemson milked the final 7 minutes or so off the clock to end it, going into that drive, more than 60% of Clemson's offensive yards in that game had come off of third and long plays, third and 5 yards or more, like
crazy
passing situation. Yeah, though they had I believe it was almost 250 yards passing on third and 5+ in that game. And look, normally we all know, I mean, good defensive teams like Alabama, typically you get in third and we know you're going to pass, it's trouble. And Alabama, and look, I'm not using the injury as an excuse for Alabama, because very clearly, Dexter Lawrence being missing from the Clemson defensive line was a greater loss. But Alabama's only real speed rusher off the edge, a guy named Christian Miller, was injured in the semifinal against Oklahoma and didn't play. They had no one to fill that role. And I think that ended up making a difference. But still, there were other guys, like in the interior of the line, who normally are pretty good at getting pressure, you know, when Alabama doesn't need to blitz anyone. They couldn't do it. So Clemson's offensive line, I thought, was really the unsung hero of the game. Trevor Lawrence obviously got all the attention, and along with Justin Ross, the receiver, and those guys were awesome, but they wouldn't have been able to do it if he hadn't gotten protection, and that to me was unexpected.
Brad Edwards with us, Hail Varsity Radio, at J. Brad Edwards on Twitter's where you follow him, ESPN Insider, College Game Day Analyst. Brad, a thought here as we look towards 2019, you laid out who are the championship favorites. Nebraska's been pegged as the third best team in the West heading into 2019. Nebraska also has a quarterback in the same sentence as Trevor Lawrence when it comes to freshman All-American recognition. What's a fair starting point in the Brad Edwards top 25? If Nebraska belongs in there, do you believe that too? What's a January 2019 projection about Nebraska football where they could land in the division?
Yeah, that's a great question. I have not looked at any teams beyond the playoff contenders at this point.
Sure.
And I don't have Nebraska on that list right now. I don't know off the top of my head how much is back from last year. I don't know the schedule, so that one's a little bit more difficult for me to answer. But I do know, just based on, you know, what the other teams in that division typically are, Nebraska should have as good a chance as anyone of getting into the conference championship game. Now, I still would think they're at least another recruiting class away from having a good chance to beat an Ohio State or a Michigan. But one game scenario, you never know. So I'll look at that further in the coming weeks and be able to give you a better idea. Have they been in a few of these, you know, way too early top 25s that have come out so far?
Yeah, they've been in, I think, four or five of them. I mean, they come in at the tail end. You lose Stanley Morgan, Divine Ozigbo. You lose those two guys that are keys on the offense. And what are you going to be better defensively? Yes, but what are your lines of scrimmage going to be like is the question. I think you're phenomenal at quarterback. I mean, Adrian's big time, and it's an odd year, which means Northwestern, Iowa, and Wisconsin all come to Lincoln. The road games are Boulder, out at CU, at Purdue, and then at Minnesota. That's kind of the nutshell. I can't quite give you the order. They're stacked. That is important. November's not usually kind to many because you're playing physical, ticked-off big guys up front consecutive weeks, you know. So, but no, I think based on the schedule and your quarterback, you can make a case for being in it till the end of the regular season for sure.
Yeah, it seems like the type of setup where they should be able to, you know, make a run at the top 25, if they're in it preseason, to be able to stay in there for quite a while, as long as they don't have bad luck on the injury front.
Sure.
That's obviously one of those things that no team has control over, and some end up doing a lot worse in that area than others.
Brad, I want to ask you about Frank Solich, and Coach Solich is back in Omaha tonight. The Outland Award every year is presented in Omaha. The Remington Award is going to be in Lincoln this Saturday night. And it's Frank, Coach Solich has been back to see family, but he's not been back kind of in a football capacity since he got fired in 2003. When I say Frank Solich, what kind of comes to mind with you? And I know you've covered college football a long time. There's a lot of people wearing red and white smiling that he's finally come back to Lincoln.
Yeah, I'm glad he has, because, you know, he's just one of those guys who really gave his heart and soul to that program. It's almost like if Philip Fulmer had not returned to Tennessee after being let go as the head coach. It was you know, he's a guy who played there and coached there forever, and it he just seems to be someone who should be synonymous with the program. And you know, look, I think of Frank Solich as a guy who was probably more appreciated long after he was gone. It's just there, I've seen it with you know other schools where you have the guy who follows the legend, and he can't live up to, he can't reach that bar. Okay, and because of it, people are frustrated, and so you let him go. And then after you let him go, you realize you could do worse. And a lot of schools have learned that. And so, you know, it's funny, I just mentioned Philip Fulmer. Tennessee is one. Like, you know, Fulmer started to take a downturn. They got rid of him, and then they go through this disastrous, you know, Lane Kiffin, Derek Dooley, Butch Jones thing where they're like, man, would we love to have, you know, the types of seasons that we were having in the final years of Phil Fulmer back. So that's the kind of the way that I look at that. And look, to his credit, he has shown that he can coach because he has strung together a really nice run at Ohio where, I mean, a lot of people don't pay attention to Mac, but they have had a very consistent program under him. And if the guy didn't know what he was doing, most of the programs in the MAC are kind of, you know, it's like a roller coaster. Like they just, they look like a typical stock where it's just up and down, up and down. But you can count on them being a bowl team every year because of what he's done. So like I said, and you know, you look back on it now and you realize he could coach all along. He just wasn't Tom Osborne. That was his biggest flaw.
Brad Edwards with us, Hail Varsity Radio at J. Brad Edwards. Well put, because there isn't anyone like T.O. and he's getting the T.O. Award tonight, the Tom Osborne Award at the Outland. Brad, I got about 90 seconds. Jalen Hurts ends up where?
Yeah, this is one where I think it comes down to what is he looking for in his new school? Is he looking for a place where he is relatively certain he's going to be the starter and just wants to have a chance to go against some Power 5 defenses, show NFL teams that he's capable of playing at that level? Or is he looking for somewhere where he can make a legitimate run at another national championship, but part of that is the calculated risk that he might not win the starting job? And I think that's a decision he has to make that's going to, you know, that's going to tell a lot as far as where he ends up going. I've heard people mention Maryland as a possibility because of his connection with Mike Locksley. Miami is one that makes sense roster-wise. I'm not sure if there's any connection there. Another one to keep an eye on is TCU because he's from Texas, and they have really been struggling at quarterback for the last few years. So those are a few I would throw out there. I've heard people mention Oklahoma. I just don't think he's the right fit for Lincoln Riley. I just don't think he's instinctive enough as a quarterback to be great in that offense. But I don't know. Well, it'd be fun to see where he ends up. I'm not guessing it'll be SEC though.
You know, Maryland has been fantastic with their quarterbacks. They've just not been able to keep the guys from hurting their knee.
Exactly. Yeah.
Because they've had big time talent at quarterback. They've had some big wins. Miami, TCU are a really good three listed there. OU, I just don't see it either. Brad, we'll get caught up here in a couple of weeks and maybe talk and look forward to some spring thoughts down the road. Thanks for jumping on with us today. A lot of fun chatting college football with you again.
You got it. I think we're about 6 weeks away from our first version of FPI, and we can talk about where Nebraska is there, and we'll get it started again.
That'll be awesome. Brad, take care, man. Thanks so much.
You got it.
There he is, Brad Edwards, ESPN Insider. College game day at J. Brad Edwards. And that was just a fun chat. And I like hearing Jalen Hurts to Maryland. That'd be freaking cool. That'd be really nice. Coming up, we'll hear from Tim Miles. Pretty real presser today from Coach Miles on Penn State. What lies ahead for this basketball team? Hail Varsity continues.
Miss us?
Come here, brother. Give me a hug. Bring it in for the real thing.
We're on call for you. Catch the podcast at HailVarsity.com, the ESPN Lincoln app, or download them on iTunes.
Saddle up, partner.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Thanks for your time. Great to be with you. Hail Varsity Radio presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Danny Burke. Big thanks to Mike Schuhart for hanging out. Brad Edwards was just awesome. You're going to want to hear the interview. on Nebraska, on Bama, on Jalen Hurts, on Frank Solich. And Danny will have that bad boy posted up on ESPN Lincoln, and Hail Varsity will get it retweeted. Parker Gabriel, friend of the show, tweeting out that Mick Stoltenberg, he's at the Outland Banquet in Omaha tonight. He has decided he will not try to continue his football career. As Parker notes, 6 total knee surgeries. And Mick did everything and anything for the squad, either as a 3 technique or a defensive tackle in a 4-3 or trying to eat up space and people as a nose guard. And also, Stoltenberg wants to be a coach. So, Mick's good dude. Best to him. He is a guy that laid it all out there for the program. 466-377-6800-825-5865. Real quick, thoughts from Danny Burke on Denver's new head coach.
I'm disappointed. I mean, no. Vic's earned it, man. I mean, it is a long time
Vic's
coming.
Vic's the defensive coordinator for the Bears.
Yep. And, yeah, I mean, everyone in Chicago is really sad, and but they understand. I mean, it's well-deserved. Like I said, nobody is surprised that it happened, but how people are even saying that, you know, if Parkey hits that kick, he may be coming back next year, too. So that's another element that just adds insult to injury. But, no, I mean, Denver will be looking nice. Defensively, of course, they've been looking nice. I think they'll only get better. As for how he'll do as a head coach, I genuinely don't know. Defensively, I can only assume they'll improve. Offensively, I don't know. They got to figure it out on that side of the ball. Lindsey's a solid back, but I just don't see a team winning with Case Keenum in the playoffs, to be honest. So I think they also were saying that Elway's going to be making the decisions offensively no matter what. So Vic's just going to have to follow along with that side of the ball.
Other news and notes here. This from Brad Biggs. And we talked to Lars an hour ago that Bruce Arians getting the band back together. That's Todd Bowles. Mm-hmm. That's Byron Leftwich. That's B.A. going to work in Tampa. There is a little snag, and that is that Bowles hasn't signed yet with Tampa. He may look at Chicago.
Yeah, that's what everyone was saying this morning, and because he does have a connection with Nagy's dad, I think coached Bowles in high school is what it was. But now I think they turn those rumors around in that he most likely is going to stay in Tampa. Some other names that were considered was that I saw was like Steve Wilks and Greg Williams, too, if he doesn't get that Browns head coaching job, because the defensive coordinator position for Chicago is the most valuable position out there besides the head coaching job.
Can I ask a question? How long till Denver ownership, like, sits John Elway down and takes his scotch away from him?
It's got to be as soon as possible with the defense they have.
Well, my point is
like they need to act fast.
Listen, bro, you've made the hires, you did the recruiting deal, and you got Peyton here, mm-hmm. and Wade had a sick defense, and they've been phenomenal with reloading defensively.
Right.
But he has been the guy that's whiffed on quarterbacks. And there's a lot of money that they've put into either first-round picks or bringing in what was out there.
Mm-hmm. Do you think they're going to draft one this summer? I don't see why you wouldn't.
No, why not? I mean, keep throwing darts, and maybe you'll find a Baker Mayfield like Cleveland did. I mean, only took Cleveland 40 quarterbacks, and Bernie Kosar was drafted in 85. Okay. Kubiak would be the guy. I mean, Denver needs an offensive spurt. They've always been good defensively. Give me Kubiak. And I know he's had some health issues and things didn't work out well with the Texans for him, but I mean, there you go.
They could scoop the quarterback from Duke.
I love him.
I couldn't remember his name, but I know we talked about it a couple of weeks ago, and head coach there just puts all the quarterbacks who lead the Mannings. I can't think of his
name
either.
Cutcliffe.
Yeah, Cutcliffe.
Fantastic. Yeah. Let's talk Tim Miles. Let's talk Nebraska. And we'll start with, all right, you're back home, and you've been working out. Penn State looms tomorrow. Don't forget, we're in the public market tomorrow. Live Hail Varsity Roadshow, Real Red tip-off, 4 to 6 in the public market. Come see us, get some ice skates, get a cocktail, play some Papa Shot. We have the Papa Shot going on, and rumor has it Chris Gorman says he can beat anybody at Papa Shot. He's our boss man with her dad. Here is Jacob Padilla. Jacob Padilla asked Tim Miles, you know, what's up with the transition defense? Because Iowa murdered Nebraska, and no one stopped the ball.
Biggest issue you saw with the transition defense against Iowa?
Effort.
What do you care?
Was it effort and care? That's bad. That's horrible. Tim Miles was asked about, you know, fixing effort and caring. What do you do?
Yeah, the job of a coach is to get a positive response, right? So you do whatever it takes, you know, and still keep your job and get a positive response.
That's the goal. Get these guys to respond to you. I hope they are not playing the part of Charlie Brown or other Peanuts characters when Charlie Brown's teacher is talking. That can't be this direction on the 9th of January 2019 after an 11-4 start. Coach Miles has been pretty open about this team. He's been pretty open about some of the issues they faced. Now, if I'm a player and I like my coach, and I'm ticked off that he used the term casual at me, I'm going to talk about it, and then I'm going to show him I'm not casual. We'll see how they respond. But overthinking, down low, specifically Roby. Here is Coach Miles. How's the team kind of been able to move past overthinking situations?
I think you just confront it, first of all. Like, you know, there's no mind game. There's no, hey, let's trick him into thinking. You just say, like, here's what I think. Is it accurate? Okay, so why? And, you know, and just kind of walk yourself through it. And but you always, anytime there's an issue that you, as a coach, you have a gut feeling on, or you recognize that maybe they don't recognize, I think you just try and teach from it.
Okay, here's an example he gave with teaching moments, being better at knowing the situation. Here is Coach Miles. Here's a for instance.
For instance, okay. Let's say Isaiah Roby, who's a terrific kid and player, you know, decides that he's sliding and Cook hits him. So he tries to take the charge and then Cook dunks it. And I say, so is that a good defensive position? Yeah, yeah. And then, he hit me, so I took the charge. I said, well, wasn't a charge. It's not your decision. It's the ref's decision. You just need to make the play. And then, you know, then you can show him Tanner Borhart standing there getting run over by a Mack truck. That's taking a charge. So, if you see the subtle differences, just play. Just play. Do your job.
It's going to be the theme. I don't know if they're coming out with T-shirts that say do your job, but that's what was preached and what Nebraska needs to do. Nebraska, real quick, before we get back to Tim Miles, I think the line's 11.5 Nebraska.
Really? That doesn't surprise me.
No, I mean, they should drill Penn State.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that they will drill Penn State. Let's talk about home and road defense, because that's been an issue. Nebraska's a different team. They're also veteran enough to not suck on the road defensively.
First of all, I think we have to credit Iowa. Iowa played a very good game. And it's not like they're a bunch of nobodies out there. They're pretty good. And so I think you have to credit Iowa. But, you know, like anything, some of your worst qualities always come out on the road. It's just the way, a fact of life. And you have to overcome that. A lot of times you have to win by 15 to win by 5. And we didn't play well enough. The fact that we even had it down to 4 late or whatever is, credit to our guys.
He nailed that. You're on the road in conference play. You got to win by 15 to win by 5. You need 10 to 12 point buffer to get out of Dodge with 4-point win. Period. That's very, very true. So the question was asked, you know, does this team, do they feel more urgency now that they've hit a bit of a skid and they finally get to come home? Urgency's been a topic of conversation. It's big. And is that urgency going to show through tomorrow night?
You know, this is a more casual team. I think that one of the things we always work on is that, you know, getting them, you know, locked in and running to the fight.
You think they're doing that at this time?
They did yesterday in practice. It's like they said they were angry in last week. And I said, well, we need to stay angry. I don't think we stayed angry. I'm not sure we were ever that angry, first of all.
He's been pretty real there. That's very telling. Are you mad? Or are you trying to act mad? So he's been pretty real. Do you think the casual comments will rub some wrong, Danny? And if so, too bad. Suck it up. Play better. And coach better.
Yeah, I think it's more of the accountability factor. I think he'll say these comments to give the guys a boost, but he's also going to address them afterwards in the locker room and be like, hey, I set the line here for you guys. Show me why I'm wrong. Improve on this. Because they know just as much as everyone else why they're slacking, but they need some motivation and to be held accountable. And it just hasn't seemed like Tim Miles has been doing that up to this point in the season. So hopefully this can be the turning point. This home game, a much-needed home game and win, is what everyone's hoping can help these guys boost their confidence back.
What can happen is what happened with Pettaway, Walt, and Siobhan.
Mm-hmm.
You can't start going your own way. You can't just do me.
Right.
You can't have this core four do that. And that's a concern. Home cooking. Last thought here from Tim Miles. How nice will it be to be in PBA? And this is a great answer from Coach.
The one thing you can't take for granted is that, oh, we're going to win at home. We're at home. And I think that's the number one message I want to put out there. That I'm happy we're at home. And our fans have been terrific. And PBA has been very good to us. And so that's good. But at the same time, I don't know that we want to depend on that.
That's so true. You just can't show up and we're in Nebraska at PBA where you've won 19 straight. Last loss was a buzzer beater to Kansas. Going to be a tight ball game tomorrow. But if you're a Nebraska fan, maybe they show up, they drill Penn State by 20, and they go get one at Indiana. It's not time to bury these guys, but you're wondering how sick they are.
And now,
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back to it, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Time for a Jock Doc Wednesday, Lincoln Orthopedic Center. Dr. Brandon Seifert. Dr. Brandon, Happy New Year, man. It's been a while. How are you?
Hey, great, buddy. Happy New Year to you.
I tell you, it was tough to watch Allen Hurns get hurt like he did, the Dallas Cowboys wide receiver. Now, former Husker Brandon Riley has been picked up due to this injury as part of the Dallas Cowboys practice squad. But man, Allen Hurns, kind of shake out what happened to him. We know he got carted off. We know there's a major injury. We know there's a fracture. Was there also a dislocation with his ankle?
Yeah, you know, if you saw the video, if you haven't saw the video, obviously a pretty gruesome injury. When you look at that, you know, clearly had a dislocation. Most of the time, as in probably 99% of the time, in order to have a dislocation, you need to have also a fracture occur in order for that to kind of slip all the way out of place like his did. And so that's essentially what he had. Initially kind of described as, you know, dislocation with what they described as two fractures. Now it sounds like maybe it was just one. But typically with that kind of injury, you know, it's a foot's planted on the ground and then kind of a twisting injury on top of that. That rotation goes through the ankle, and then typically what happens is the small bone on the outside of the ankle breaks first. That's called the fibula. So typically you'll break that. That rotation kind of travels through the rest of the ankle joint, and what happens is the talus, which is kind of the dome-shaped bone up underneath the ankle, will kind of slip out underneath. And then the ankle dislocates, and if the force is great enough, you'll sometimes break even on the inside part of the ankle. If you feel along the inside part of your ankle that little bump that's there, that's called the medial malleolus, and typically that will break as well. If that doesn't break, oftentimes the ligament that holds the two bones together in the ankle, called the syndesmosis, we've talked about that before, that's the big ligament that kind of is involved with the high ankle sprains. Excuse me, sometimes you'll see that actually tear along with the dislocation. And so in his case, it sounds like it was more the fibula, the smaller bone, it broke. He had dislocated. And then obviously the news reports are not saying a whole lot about other injuries, if there was another fracture or if it was that big ligament that was injured. But obviously with that injury, underwent, you know, reduction where they put it back in place on the field, took him to the hospital, and then did surgery right away that night.
It looked extremely gruesome. It was tough to watch, and you hope nothing but the best for Alan Hearns, the Cowboys wideout, a Jock Doc Wednesday, Lincoln Orthopedic Center. Dr. Brandon Seifert with us. Dr. Brandon, let's talk when the athlete gets to you guys, what you do to fix him or her, and the steps you take to do recovery surgery.
Sure. You know, the important thing with these kind of injuries, any kind of dislocation that you have, whether there's a fracture involved or not, you want to try to bring the joint back into its appropriate position. One, just in terms of, you know, taking pressure off the nerves and surrounding structures like the blood vessels. But number two, it's also more comfortable for the athlete once that joint is reduced or put back into place. And so that's kind of your first management thing right on the field. Again, whether there's a fracture there or not, it's still okay to go ahead and put these back into place. So if I'm on the field with that athlete, which we've had, you know, several of these I've seen while I'm on the field, I'll go ahead and put that back into place. It actually is a really easy injury to put back into place in terms of the dislocation piece of it, and then the athlete feels much better. And then you want to mobilize it. You clearly on the field, you don't have casting material, splinter material necessarily on the field. Sometimes you do. So you can hold basically pressure to it, hold it in place. You can put them on the John Deere Gator cart or what any type of transportation device, send them out, splint them up. And then the big question with these is, you know, at what point do you take them and fix them? You can fix them right away that night. You typically encapsulate them before a lot of swelling occurs. Sometimes there's less pain involved if you splint it up, give it a couple of days of rest, allow the swelling to go down, and you can fix them in a couple of days as well. What would expedite this needing to be fixed right away would be if there's an open injury. So in the past, we've called these compound fractures, but we call them open fractures now. If any skin has been broken, the bones may have been exposed to the environment. That's what we call an open fracture. If there has been an open fracture, you want to get to those right away, at least in the first 24 hours. And so those would have, you know, surgery right away. They didn't say if Allen's injury was open or not, but clearly with the mechanism he had, it may have been. But those obviously introduce a whole other kind of spectrum of problems. It takes a higher level of trauma to do it. There's more injury to the soft tissues when that happens. Obviously, the infection risk goes way up with that. And those would be the things we'd worry about in addition to just being a fracture dislocation, is if it's open.
When it comes to fixing it and the surgery itself, is it difficult? And then also from a shock standpoint, I mean, I'm trying to put myself in Alan Hearns' place for a second and just imagine my ankle snapping like that and not freaking out because of the pain.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's always amazing when you take care of athletes with this kind of trauma, even, you know, in addition to the athletes, just patients in general go through trauma, that kind of initial endorphin release or release of kind of, you know, your natural painkillers in your body is pretty amazing. So you look at a terrible injury like that, you kind of have those initial moments, that just kind of nasty, horrible pain, and then that kind of subsides for a little while as your body releases some endorphins, some natural painkillers. And then, you know, your body kind of catches up with that and the pain starts in again, you know, 5 to 10 minutes later. And fortunately, you know, most of the times by then somebody's there in terms of the EMS personnel, they can help with the pain. But yes, these are, you know, very painful injuries, of course. And part of the other piece of this is just the, you know, the traumatic stress from it. You know, if, you know, Alan goes back and watches the video, or if he remembers looking down at his ankle and seeing it, you know, basically on backwards, those kind of things are quite traumatic, and those are pieces that later on getting back to sports can be tough, you know, reminding yourself of that picture, what that looked like, and having the confidence to go play again. That's a whole other matter.
Dr. Brandon Seifert with us, Lincoln Orthopedic Center, a Jock Doc Wednesday. Dr. Brandon, when it comes to recovery and back to action on the practice field or in a game, what's the timeline look like for Alan Hearns?
Yeah, it's a pretty extensive road. So, you know, fixing these, you're going to go in, and the way we typically will fix a fibula, the small bone on the outside, would be a plate and some screws. If there's a fracture maybe on the inside part of the ankle, that which is called a medial malleolus, either screws or a little tiny plate over there would work. And then obviously if that ligament in between the two bones has an injury to it or has a big tear, we'd put this little kind of suture construct in between, called a tightrope, would be one device we could use. Anyway, after the surgery, you know, there's going to be a period of some non-weight bearing in there, whether that's, you know, 2 weeks up to 6 weeks, depending on the severity of the injury. And then once you kind of get past that limited weight-bearing period, then you start into some stationary bike, some pool workouts, elliptical probably by anywhere from 7 to 10 weeks, if not a little sooner. And then typically with these, you're not doing a lot of jogging activities for about 8 to 12 weeks. Total recovery time getting back on the football field, it could be anywhere from 4 to 6 months. Total recovery time, feel like your old self again or close to it, is probably more like a year, year and a half. Usually that first kind of season back, you know, you're playing, you're doing okay, but you're usually not yourself that first season. It's kind of that second season when you kind of get your groove back. This is definitely a recoverable injury. He should be able to come back and play from this. The big issue would be, you know, what kind of agility does he have? What's his speed like? It just takes a lot of work to kind of work through the stiffness and discomfort from these, and to kind of get that feel back for knowing where your, you know, joints are in space, called proprioception. All those kind of things just take a long time to recover from.
Dr. Brandon, thanks for the update on this. Appreciate your time.
Absolutely. You guys take care.
That was gruesome with what Hearns went through. A reminder, buckle up, click it or ticket. Something's got to stop your motion. It can be a seatbelt or an airbag when you're in an accident. Passenger seat, driver's seat, or back seat. Buckle up now. Click it or ticket. A message from the Nebraska Department of Highway Safety Office.
He's in his 30s, but sounds like he was born with a stogie in one hand and a brew in the other.
Now, say my name.
It's Schmitty on Hale Varsity Radio.
I got the body of a taut preteen Swedish boy.
One final time, Hale Varsity Radio, seeing social media light up with Frank Solich at the Outland Award. Pictures of him and Coach Osborne. Really, really cool to have Frank Solich back in town. We are back in the rail yard tomorrow in the public market. Real Red tip-off, 4 to 6, 8 o'clock game for Nebraska-Penn State. I know we're there a little early, but should be perfect ice skating weather if you are the the fam or the ice skater or the hockey star in your family. Want to come down and hang out. Beer and soda and lots of fun inside the public market. We're there 4 to 6. Hale Varsity Roadshow. We may have a couple of surprise guests come by. We'll get in touch with Bo Reed as well. So that'll be pretty awesome. Husker standout, get his take on the team. Good stuff from Tim Miles tonight. Great stuff from Lars Anderson on his friend back in the NFL, Bruce Arians. And Brad Edwards, high thoughts on Nebraska football for 2019 and Coach Solich. So, Danny, anybody in action tonight? You're circling here?
You know, I think I'm taking the night off. Yesterday was brutal. I've been struggling.
How brutal was Tuesday for you?
We didn't win anything, that's for
sure. You went 0-for?
Well, yeah, the picks I said at least last. Like, the Kings blew a 20-point lead
to the
Suns
without
Devin Booker. And the parlay didn't hit. The Thunder dropped one at home. That was tough. Michigan State was about the only winner. So, because Minnesota lost, too. They blew it to Maryland. Maryland came back, battled, won by double digits. That was a tough one to see, but yeah, so I'll probably take the night off, recuperate, and come back strong tomorrow. That's the plan. And we'll have our picks for Nebraska, so it already seems like you're riding the Nittany Lions covering, so we'll see if your mind changes by tomorrow.
I am trying to provide motivation.
You and Tim Miles both.
Right. Let's get you motivated for Caller 10. As Disturbed is coming to town here in January, pair of tickets. These aren't, well, here's some tickets. Here's in the, these are lower bowl. They're money seats. They're out of elbows and mosh pit reach. Great seats. Caller 10. Right now with Hale Varsity at ESPN. Caller 10 to see Disturbed. 466-3776. 800-825-5865. Caller 10. I wish I could do that with my voice. Can we just bet out here to A Little Disturbed? Danny's like, I might have to put that on my phone. Yay or nay, did you ever listen to Disturbed? It may be before your time.
Yeah, no, not really.
Danny's like, What do you mean disturbed?
Let's hear it. Let's hear the impersonation.
No. There's no such thing as Schmidt karaoke.
No.
So, caller 10 will make it happen. Danny will take your name and number and get you a pair of tickets to Disturbed at Pinnacle Bank Arena. We are back tomorrow at 4 in the rail yard. Public market, come see us. Papa Shot is going to be there. You got that that roommate you want to make look bad? Danny, we got to get Papa Shot hooked up.
I'll take everyone down.
I know you will. You got to roll. You got to roll down after the show at 6. We'll still be down there hanging out while the beer show's going on. So stroll down, get your cocktail. We'll do Papa Shot. We'll film it, and maybe we'll add to the steak and the beer wager that's ongoing. Talk to you tomorrow.